Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
And I'm Ben Bolin. I write some videos here on the self-same website.
Fantastic.
Self-same? Can we say self-same?
It's okay. Everybody understands what you mean.
Yeah, it's kind of redundant, though.
Yeah, it's okay. We got it.
We got it.
So anyways, let's move on to today's topic because I want to get right into it. It's got an unusual title, I'll tell you that. Probably have a lot of people guessing about this one.
Yeah, a lot of the listeners are probably thinking, wait a second.
Well, we have an article on our site that will explain this very concisely. Mm-hmm. The article is called, What Does the Reptilian Brain Have to Do with Car Manufacturing? That's specifically the title they can look for on HowStuffWorks.com. But we're going to explain it a little bit more, give it a little bit more, a little more depth to it.
Yeah, just a bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. And we'll give you some insider tips that you may not immediately recognize from the very beginning of the article, which is we're not talking about nearby snakes affecting your car buying or car manufacturing decisions.
Yeah, this one sounded odd to me right when it came up, and I thought, what the heck does this mean? But I'm glad we looked into it because it's pretty interesting, really. I mean, I had no idea all this was going on, so we can delve right into it if you liked.
Yeah, Scott, break it down. What exactly are we talking about?
I found a few different papers about this, and there's a gentleman by the name of Paul McLean, who is the former director of the Laboratory of the Brain and Behavior at the United States National Institute of Mental Health.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Long title. His idea is that there is kind of an evolutionary development of the brain where there are actually three different brains. Mm-hmm. Three different brains that work together. So everybody has these three different brains. It's not that, you know, one person has one type of brain, another one has another. Well, that may be true. We're saying that there are three that are three within every individual.
Almost like if your brain was a city, these are three neighborhoods that compose the city.
That's probably a good way to put it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm kind of dumbing it down. But we're about to talk about the three segments, right?
Yeah, there are three segments, and this is kind of key to this whole thing, is that there are three segments. There are the cortex, the limbic, and the reptilian. And the reptilian is one we're going to focus on, but I'll tell you about the cortex and the limbic as well, just so you know what they are, a little background, okay?
Oh, yeah, don't leave me hanging, man. I'll look dumb if somebody asks me.
the cortex, this is according to Paul McLean, it constitutes 5/6 of the human brain. So this is the largest portion of your brain. And this is the outer section of the brain that it makes language, speech, writing, a lot of the more, I guess, intellectual. It's the highest functioning part of your brain.
Like
it's
complex planning and
stuff. Yeah, exactly. It's the rational part of your brain. It does the reasoning. And I guess before we go any further, all three of these work together too. So it's not just there's three parts, they work individually. They all work together to make decisions. But again, the cortex is the thinking part of the brain, really. They all think, but you know what I mean. Yeah, it's more intelligent, I guess, intelligent.
The majority of the brain, too.
The limbic system, that is the second part of the brain that houses the center of emotion. So this is the part that you may feel happy or sad, or it gives you emotion along with being balanced by the more logical side of the cortex. Mm-hmm. And then we're getting to the reptilian, which is a very primal part of the brain.
Oh, it's my favorite part.
And this is where our subject today comes into play. The reptilian part, now I'm way oversimplifying all this, so please look into it if you want to.
Yeah,
it's really interesting. There's a lot more to this, but the reptilian brain is two parts. It's the brainstem and the cerebellum. And the brainstem and the cerebellum are primarily responsible for, self-preservation, mm-hmm. Aggression, territory-type situations, and it loves power, it loves sex, it loves anything that's bigger and badder than anything else. It loves things that are stronger. It's just a very base part of your brain. It's very, and I know that's the base of the brain, but I'm saying it's also the base part of the brain. It makes what we're calling in our article gut level decisions for us.
So, Scott, what we're saying when we say gut level decision making, we're talking about really the possibility that this segment of your brain can influence your decisions or your interpretation of a situation in a way that you're not thinking about with that majority 5/6 part of your brain.
I guess so. It's a subconscious decision. It's mm-hmm. it's something you've heard everybody say, I have a gut feeling.
Right.
I have a gut feeling this is right or this is mm-hmm. wrong. That's where this intuition is coming from, apparently, according to McLean.
It's like the psychological term for the id, the I want, the power,
exactly.
The power, domination, desire. It's, I don't want to say it's crazy, but it's not as concerned with things outside of those immediate gut level reactions.
No. It wants the biggest and best and the fastest and, you know, that type of thing. And you can understand where this comes into play a lot with somebody who's marketing a new vehicle mm-hmm. to us, the car buying public.
Because what happens, Scott?
What do you mean, what happens?
What happens when you walk in the parking lot, and let's say it's the parking lot of a dealership, and you're mm-hmm. ready to buy a car, mm-hmm. and you came there looking for the most, you know.
So you want to buy a minivan.
You want to buy a minivan. You came there for a minivan, mm-hmm. right? And then just something happens as you're passing that Mustang or the Corvette,
mm-hmm.
and the next thing you know.
Yep, you're driving home in your brand new Corvette.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and that's a reptilian decision. Not that that's a bad thing. That's just the part of you that is saying, I need to have this, and there's a reason why. You know, it's just telling you that I have to be the fastest or the best, mm-hmm. or this is the best car because it's the sexiest, it's the boldest, it's mm-hmm. the most powerful car. I want, you know, the one with 600 horsepower. I don't want the minivan that, you know, gets good fuel economy.
Yeah. So wait. So car manufacturers, you're saying they're aware of this?
They are, and actually there's something called neuromarketing that they're using right now. And it sounds a little scary, neuromarketing, but it's basically a new science that kind of supports the idea of this gut level purchase. Mm. And the way it works is that subjects are hooked up to fMRIs, which are magnetic resonating imagery that tells you what part of the brain is operating at certain points. So
okay.
And they show them car ads. And they monitor eye movement. They monitor what parts of the brain are stimulated during certain times, what excites them, what gets them, I guess, what stimulates that part of the brain that's the reptilian part, and they target that. They want to if they want to appeal to that.
Hmm.
So it's getting down to a sign. There's, again, broadly generalized, so
sure.
Just look it up. But yeah, it's interesting that they can use new technology to really fine-tune this, really focus in on mm-hmm. that part of the brain. Now, no one claims to know exactly how all the brain works or, you know, have it completely mapped out.
Not yet, at least.
Not yet. But, you know, this is a step in the right direction, I guess, for the car makers, auto manufacturers.
You know, when we first started, when we first talked about this, you actually, off the air, have brought this article to my attention, and I was so impressed by these neuromarketers
mm-hmm.
Because it reminds me of some things we've read before about restaurants or grocery stores or a lot of other, especially advertising,
mm-hmm.
because we know that people respond to colors in certain ways and certain types of music or temperature. You know, it's very, I don't want to generalize too much, Scott, but I would be willing to bet money, were I a betting man, that a lot of people are more influenced by these sort of factors than we would like to believe.
I think so. I think a lot of people, because it is that gut level feeling, and mm-hmm. it may override the cortex in a lot of cases where, you know,
sure.
you go out looking for that minivan and you end up getting, or a sedan or whatever mm-hmm. you want, something a lot more fuel efficient, and you then opt for something that's maybe something a little sexier, like you might get the Mustang or you might get the Corvette, like we mentioned. So I think it does override. I mean, otherwise, these types of cars probably wouldn't sell. People just simply want those vehicles for one reason or another, and there's something behind that. There's mm-hmm. I guess, is it physiology? It would be physiology behind this, right?
Yeah, it's physical,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's definitely something like that. So there's a point to all this for them.
So what do you think, what's your take on this as far as well, I don't want to verge onto morality, Scott, but mm-hmm. what's your take on this? How do you feel about this technique?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems pretty deceptive to be able to do something like this. But then again, every person is different. So you have your own mind. You can make your own mind up.
Mm-hmm.
So you can Did I say that right? I hope I did.
You can make your own mind up.
Yeah, yeah, sure. That means that you know, you can, if you stick to your guns on this, if you want something that's affordable and, mm-hmm. and reliable and good gas mileage, you can stick to that, or you can go with your gut feeling. Some people just do that, Ben. Sometimes they just kind of go off on a whim and do what they want, and they're maybe more ruled by their reptilian brain than they are by the cortex or the well, probably the reptilian and the limbic combined, but you know, the emotional as mm-hmm. well. But maybe the cortex loses out in that case.
And there's no reason why manufacturers would have to just stick with the reptilian.
No, there's not, because they can focus on the cortex side of things, where they would say, you know, here, try to make it appeal to that. Mm-hmm. So you're gonna see sedans that have, you know, fantastic gas mileage, or that are cheaper to begin with, and that, you
safer
know,
appeal. Of
exactly.
Somehow.
You know, they advertise the safety of the vehicle, mm-hmm. and that appeals to the cortex side of you, the logical, rational thinking side of you, where you say, like, yeah, I've got a family, I need to have four doors, and I need to have something that's, you know, unbelievably safe. Hmm. And I want something that's not going to roll over on me. I want something that's, you know, just, I guess a solid car is what you describe it as. And that's when the cortex is won over in this case. You know, you may have to leave that gut feeling behind in some cases.
You know, I'm such a sucker for this kind of stuff, because I can't, even though I'm aware intellectually, or I guess 5/6 of my brain mm-hmm. is aware of mm-hmm. this sort of process, mm-hmm. dude, I fall for it so hard every time.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm that guy who will be sitting, and it's so easy for me to take a suggestion like that. I'm that guy who will be sitting in traffic listening to the radio and then hear an ad and go, when was the last time I had a Whopper? I have to get one of those right now.
So it totally works on you.
I don't even like Whoppers, really, Scott.
But you...
it just happens. I don't think I should be... People like me should not be allowed either really large amounts of money or the ability to, you know, go to car dealerships.
I see. Yeah. So you're I guess a tool of the marketing person.
I kind of, they know
sorry,
me.
I didn't mean to put it that way exactly.
No, it's okay. I've dealt with being a tool a long time ago. But no, what I'm saying is, again, you know, that's why we should highlight that point. A lot of times these gut reactions that happen are purposefully solicited by the people in charge of making products for you to buy, and cars are no different. One of the tricks, you know, if you don't want to give into it, or you think you're particularly susceptible, one of the biggest tricks is to wait around for some time. Mm-hmm. Don't immediately act on it, and if you wait for a few minutes, odds are it's gonna lessen.
Your emotions are going to fade, is what you're saying.
Yeah, unless you're... Yeah. Don't count going on a test drive as waiting before you make a decision.
You know, I've... Before, when I was purchasing a car, they let me take the new car home. Not a new car, it was a used car.
Mm-hmm.
They let me leave my car at the dealership and take that one home overnight just to see how I, you know...
Yeah.
I likened it to, go ahead and take the puppy home and see if you don't like it, you know, then bring it back if you don't want it. There's no way you're going to say, I don't like this car, because you're leaving your 10 or 12-year-old car at the dealership.
Sure.
And bringing home one that's 2 years old and has far less miles, and it's been, you know, detailed by the dealership.
Mm-hmm.
It drives fantastic. It feels great. You're going to say, like, you know, because you spent that much time behind the wheel and you've already seen it in your garage. You know, it's they were appealing to the gut level, I guess, on that one.
Yeah, it's hard to say no on
it,
that one.
It really is, and it was still a smart decision. I know it was, but they did let me take it home, and I did fall for that. But I also knew what I wanted. I didn't go in blindly either.
Yeah, I don't know if you're the type who would fall for that kind of thing. It sounds more like you knew what you wanted, but that definitely sealed the deal.
Mm-hmm. Usually it's a matter of money for me.
Yeah.
I usually hold off on the thing just because money. Yeah, I mean, I'm drawn to it, of course,
mm-hmm.
but I usually, I guess, get better sense towards the end when I look at my bank account. I realize it's not there.
Wait, your real bank account or the...
What?
The anonymous one?
The anonymous... What?
I'm sorry, man.
Anonymous?
Oh, no, listen.
The overseas
Scott,
account?
I promise you we will take that part out.
Sure, okay. No mention of my overseas accounts, right? The other interesting thing about this is that there are some cars now that appeal to all three parts of the brain.
That seems like, I guess, a logical conclusion, but it seems really difficult to do.
It does, but when you look at cars like, and I think our examples here in the article are the Tesla Roadster,
oh, wow.
And the Fisker Karma, These cars that are sexy. Mm-hmm. They're the environmentally sound thing to do, I guess. If you want to say that,
Cortex. You
could say it's environmentally sound. Sure. And also there's the mileage thing, and there's the you're doing a good job for the environment, and you're mm-hmm. You're leading the way for alternative fuels, and there's this whole angle that we haven't even seen yet, really, because there's not many of these out there. So they're going to start appealing to all three parts of the brain, and they know what they're doing. They really mm-hmm. do. It's not that they're trying to hide it.
Well, those are not inexpensive vehicles either.
No, they're not. They're very expensive at this point. Well, expensive for me, anyways. They're mm-hmm. up near the $100,000 mark, and or if not over. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're expensive, but that may be where the Cortex takes over and says, yeah. You can't do this.
Well, eventually, maybe. The Cortex always has the last word.
Yeah, that's right.
Eventually.
That's right.
So I guess then, I don't know, Scott, what do you think? Do you think we've broken down a little bit of the how behind
buying
cars?
I think so. You know what? I think just getting it out there, letting it be known that there is this reptilian brain and car manufacturing link. Mm-hmm. I think people will be interested in that. I think they should take a deeper look at it maybe. Of course, read our article and then go from there. There are links at the end of the story that can take you to other places where people have, written papers, had discussions about this whole connection.
And ladies and gentlemen, of course, we are by no means implying that you are anywhere near as gullible as I am. So please don't think we're saying that. Just a word to the wise. Be aware of it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. You want to do some listener mail?
I love listener mail.
Okay, Scott, so James writes in from Tokyo to say that he's listened to our show for a few months now. He really enjoys it. Love hearing that.
From Tokyo?
Yeah.
Wow. Apparently.
During our recent episode on automobile recalls, this is what he's talking about. He says, you mentioned the Audi SUA, sudden unintended acceleration problem, and he notes that the NHTSA, National Highway Traffic and Safety Association, report concluded the majority of those incidents were based on pedal misapplication.
Hmm. So you're saying that someone hit both pedals at the same time?
Kind of operator error.
Ah,
is what
so
that would be.
The pedals are too close. That's mm-hmm. what they were saying.
And then here's where it gets interesting. He says, it is also worth noting that the Porsche 911 at the time had the exact pedal location as the Audi, and some commentators have posited that the problem laid with the type of people who bought and drove 911s, because, again, those Porsche drivers did not have any sudden unintended acceleration problems.
Oh, boy.
Versus the people who bought the Audis with the pedals in the same place.
Ben.
I know. I'm just saying this is what James is saying. Man.
I understand.
This isn't me.
I understand.
So I wanted to get your take on that.
Boy, that's a hard one to comment on.
That's
because
a tough one.
I know. I mean, I hate to say it. Well, you know what? I don't know if I even want to say that, but you probably can guess what I'm thinking. I love the 911 or 911. You said 911.
I know.
That's okay.
I don't want to say
it. You got me saying it now. Yeah. I love the 911, and I know that, it's typically an enthusiast that gets a vehicle like that. Typically someone that's their weekend vehicle, or maybe it's a daily driver, but they're really into driving their cars.
That's fair.
They're very precise. Mm-hmm. As far as the Audi owners, I mean, it's hard to say who's behind the wheel, because mm-hmm. I had an Audi. I know a lot of people that just drive one as daily drivers, but
and you're crazy.
Yeah. That's right. You're crazy. But I'm just sidestepping this whole thing, as you can tell. I don't really want to say that I think it may be true, but if the pedals are too close and someone hit both pedals at one time, I could see the car lurching forward. I could understand how that happens.
Yeah, and
I didn't really say anything there, did I?
No, I thought that was a really good duck, actually. I was like in the Matrix.
I should be a politician.
I think it was pretty good,
yeah.
Man. But, yeah, so, James, thanks for writing in. We're not going to we're not really going to say that we think we can generalize about these kind of vehicles, except that people who do buy that Porsche probably do tend to be automobile enthusiasts, and this probably is not their daily driver. But if it is, we can be absolutely certain that they're probably on their best behavior when they're driving it.
Okay, I'll go along with whatever you say, Ben.
Oh, okay. I'll take the fall.
Like that. I'll cop out like that.
Okay.
Because that's what I do.
Everybody gets one. All right, well, guys, so we've touched on a little bit of a controversial listener mail. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed reading it. Thanks to James for writing in. Thanks to all you guys for listening. And if you have an idea for a topic, if you have some stories that you would like us to hear, then please send us an email
at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.